Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, street vendors face a lot of risks as they sell their food and wares, and the pandemic has exacerbated their vulnerability. We'll look at how Fresno is responding to the recent killing of a street vendor amid an uptick in thefts and assaults. First, though, we'll take a moment to consider Why We Swim, which is also the title of Bonnie Tsui's book. We are pulled to the paradox of water as a source of life and death, says Tsui, who looks at what compels us again and again to swim despite its dangers. Join us.
This is Barbara Leslie, president of the Oakland Port Commission. Oakland International Airport, OAK, is proud to bring you this podcast of KQED's Forum. When you're choosing your next adventure, the smart and convenient choice is to fly the East Bay Way from OAK to destinations across the USA and Mexico. And when you return home, tune in to KQED, always bringing us remarkable stories about who we are and where we live. Enjoy today's episode of Forum.
This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim. To live deliberately as a swimmer means you are a seeker, a chaser of the ocean's blue corduroy, a follower of river veins. That's what New York Times contributor Bonnie Tsui writes in her book, Why We Swim. A lifelong swimmer whose parents met at a pool, Tsui's research into swimming's physical and psychological benefits, combined with her love of the sport, help answer the question of why some, quote, heed the siren call of the water. Bonnie Tsui, welcome to Forum.
Thanks so much for having me, Mina.
Your book came out last spring when the pandemic began. So your paperback version is out now, and it includes a new essay about what it was like to put out a book about swimming at a time when most people could not swim. So given that, what was the reaction to your book last spring?
It was such a strange time, right? This has been an interesting day to kind of look back over the year and say, almost a year ago to the day, Why We Swim came out, and we had no idea what was going to happen with the book. And all of us authors who had been watching and waiting and realizing our books were going to come out in this just unprecedented, uncertain time, just threw up our hands and said, what's going to happen? And I have to say that the last year, the silver linings of it all, of course, have been that all of these swimmers who, we've all had so many things taken away from us and all of these things that we took for granted and never had time to really think about, what does this really mean to me? We just go to our pools in the morning and we have our workouts and we see our friends and we go home and we go to work or we go into the bay or we go into the ocean. And then realizing, when all the pools close, that, that's the daily tonic that keeps me sane. You know, that's the immersion that smooths my feathers back and makes me have the sort of mental resources, emotional resources to deal with everything that life throws at me. And I had the wonderful, joy of receiving these letters from swimmers all around the world who said, you made me think about something that I never thought about before. And that that people took to the open waters. I mean, that was the best part.
Yes. Early on when the pools were closed, people were telling you that they were doing things they never thought they'd do, which was open water swimming, for example, which illustrated your book's whole point that there's something that people need about being in the water. Can you talk more about that, about how what happened reflected the very things that you write about in your book about the pull of the water, especially in hard times? Bonnie Tsui? Well, while we wait to try to reconnect with Bonnie Tsui, I'd love to share a little bit with you from Bonnie Tsui's book. And this is a passage that she had planned to read, and I hope she doesn't mind that I am going to read it. It begins with, "Why do we swim?" which is the title of her book. Why do we swim when evolution has shaped us to excel on land by running down prey until it drops from exhaustion? Of course, it has to do with survival. Somewhere along the way, swimming helped us to get from one prehistoric lakeshore to another and escape predators of our own, to dive for that trove of bigger shellfish and get to new sources of food, to venture across oceans and settle new lands, to navigate all manner of aquatic perils and see swimming as a source of joy, pleasure, achievement, to arrive at this day to talk about why we swim. This book is an investigation of what seduces us to water, despite its dangers, and why we come back to it again and again. It's clear to me that once we can swim for survival, swimming can be so much more. The act of swimming can be one of healing and health, a way to well-being. Swimming together can be a way to find community through a team, a club, or a shared beloved body of water. We have only to watch each other in water to know that it creates the space for play. If we get good enough at the thing, it can be an engine of competition, a way to test our mettle in the pool or open water. Swimming is about the mind, too, to find rhythm in the water, is to discover a new way of being in the world through flow. This is about our human relationship to water and how immersion can open our imaginations. I'm reading from Bonnie Tsui's book, Why We Swim. And Bonnie Tsui, are you back with us?
I'm back.
I'm so glad.
I heard your Zoom crash.
Yes. So pandemic live shows. Anyway, that was the passage that I know that you plan to read. And it in some ways starts to answer the question that I was asking you just before the Zoom crashed, which is why people need the water, why people feel that swimming is a way to deal with hard times. What did you discover about that as you researched your book?
Well, one of the things that really stood out to me is how, all of the science shows that our brains respond to the sounds and sights and, just being around water. You don't even have to get in it to experience the benefits of what we are just sort of hardwired to. What I love, the writer, science writer Florence Williams writes in her book about, it's called The Nature Fix, and it's about how our brains are wired to certain set points in the environment, responding to blue places, green places, that when we are around water, we are alpha wave activity increases. Those are the waves, the brain waves that are associated with calm and relaxation and creativity, and then once we get into the water, of course, we know that it feels so good. Just to plunge into, like, sensorily, you understand that, like, all of your senses are kind of muffled, and there's this meditative hush. And think back to when we are, in the womb, that there's a very, like, thinking about what that's like, must be like, and how we respond to that, makes sense. It makes sense that that's the soothing, that's the comfort of it, both from a sound and from an immersion perspective.
Yes. And of course, one of the things that you really touch on is the way that there is this evolutionary piece to the pull, meaning you talk about how we've evolved from water. And one of the ways that you illuminate this point is through the story of Gudlaugr Fridthjofsson, who basically was saved by his own biology. Can you share a little bit of that story and why it grabbed you so much?
Absolutely. There's a reason why I chose that story to open the book, right? So in 1984, this Icelandic fisherman named Gudlaugr Fridthjofsson, his fishing vessel capsized off the coast of Iceland, and he ended up swimming 6 hours over 6 kilometers in 41 degree water back to safety. Everyone else perished. I mean, you and I would die, within 20, 30 minutes just of hypothermia. And he ended up swimming for 6 hours in this water, freezing water, much colder air. And then once he got out of the water to safety, he exhibited no signs of hypothermia, just a little bit of dehydration. And it turns out that not only was he a great swimmer, that his body was
like had a, you know, a biological quirk where his fat layer was 2 to 3 times normal human thickness and more solid. And he was like basically more like a seal, a human seal, a marine mammal than a terrestrial mammal. And, you know, they studied his body and how it responded to cold water immersion, and he was able to keep his core body temperature stable, where we, you know, normally we can't do that. But we kind of, it, to me, this story is like this melding of like biology and sort of what we know, what we learn, because we as humans have to learn how to swim. We don't know how to do it from birth the way a lot of terrestrial mammals do. And so it's this funny intertwining of all of these things that make him, his story so enthralling for us. You know, we love survival stories. We love myths about Selkies, you know, the half human, half seal peoples of like Scottish and Icelandic lore. And all of those things make his story so compelling for us.
He definitely was at a point in his life when you reached out to him where he was no longer talking with people from the media. Can you share a little bit about why that was and what you think made the difference in terms of your ability to get him to befriend you?
You know, as a journalist, of course, I sort of back up at the time, of course, this was 1984. He at first was very willing to talk about his experiences and shared them in order to, you know, make fishing vessels safer, you know, putting life rafts that are automatically deploying on the fishing vessels, because that's sort of what happened that night that, you know, his friends died. And it was like this very traumatic event.
Right.
And in Iceland, of course, these kinds of things are commonplace, were commonplace for so many many years, because it's just like a fishing and island culture. And so he, you know, I think you can only really talk so much about, you know, something, a tragic thing that happened to you before you realize, you know, A, you're tired of talking about it. B, you want to move on with your life and just live, you know, you want to live and leave these sad things and memories behind. And so he stopped talking to the media and you know, but every year there's a swim held in his honor called Gudlaugsson. It's Gudlaugr's swim, you know, and it's like this annual tradition that honors him, and there would be like more attention, and internationally people would keep calling. And then there was this movie made about him. And he, you know, I decided like what I wanted to do was to send him a letter. So I wrote him a letter and then ran it through Google Translate into Icelandic. And then I mailed both versions of it to him. And then he wrote back, you know, and we just, you know, at first he said, no, he didn't really want to be a part of my project. It wasn't personal, but we just kept writing and we were pen pals for a year. And then I went to see him in Iceland, and the rest of it is, I tell it in the book, but it is really such a special, I'm really so honored that he trusted me with his story. And I think he did because, you know, in the larger context of just swimming and what it means to our species, I think he thought that his story could sit in there in the way that he wanted it to. And I think that it was less about him and what happened to him and what he was able to do than what that sort of exemplified about like resilience and just us strange humans and our relationship with the water. And I'm really, really glad that he did trust me to do that.
Yes, there is something that connects swimmers and the experience of swimming. And I'm going to invite our listeners to tell us why we swim, why they swim. After the break, this is Forum. I'm Mina Kim.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees, who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're talking about why we swim, the psychological, the personal, the historical, the health reasons that we do it, with Bonnie Tsui, journalist and New York Times contributor, and of course, author of the book, Why We Swim. Why do you swim? And if you're not a swimmer, what's your relationship with swimming, your relationship to water? Give us a call, 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch on Twitter or Facebook at KQED Forum, or you can email your questions to forum@kqed.org. James writes, I'm a bay and ocean swimmer. Anecdotally, the majority of bay swimmers I see going with wetsuits or skins are women, and speculation on why men tend to avoid cold water swims while women are drawn to them? Huh. Bonnie Tsui, any thoughts on that? Have you thought about whether this falls along gender lines?
That's a great question. I won't purport to have any, diehard sort of opinions on this. I do think that at least from a anecdotal perspective with open water swims and women, especially as the distances grow longer, that a lot of the sort of like speed elements fall away, you know, the sort of like brute strength. I don't mean brute as in like a caveman. I mean brute as just like sheer muscle strength, sprint strength kind of falls away, those advantages that have traditionally separated men and women when it comes to physical activities. And efficiency and endurance really kind of seem to fall on the side of women. And maybe that has to do with buoyancy and just like, you know, pain tolerance, endurance. But again, you know, there's also some evidence of this over other sports as well, with like ultra running, say, or different kinds of ultra marathon type sports. But definitely with marathon swimming, you know, this is something that it does seem that the you know, some of the traditional differences or advantages of one or the other have sort of fallen away.
So you decided yourself to do a wetsuit-free swim in San Francisco Bay. Can you talk about why you wanted to do that and what the experience was like, what you learned from that experience?
I mean, I think that the Dolphin Club and South End Rowing Club swimmers are just an inspiration for us all. I mean, just getting into the bay like year-round and swimming and just, you know, reminding themselves and us what it means to be alive. You know, that water just makes you feel electric and alive. And I wanted to know what that was like. You know, I had swum in the bay, numerous times before and had, you know, swum from Alcatraz, but I had worn a wetsuit at that time. And I remember thinking, you know, this was open water swimming. What had at that time years ago was new to me. And so I thought, you know, I want to feel what it feels like to just be, you know, in the 50 plus degree water with just, you know, my swimsuit. And of course I had the best tutor, who was Kim Chambers, who was world record phenom marathon swimmer, first woman to swim from the Farallones to San Francisco. She's just a delight and just like the biggest champion of open water swimming because of what it did for her. And I just got in the water with her and I just remember feeling like I knew it was going to kind of hurt for a little bit, but then, and it did, it does feel like ice fire sort of flaming all over your body, but then it feels great. You just feel alive. And I think that this very acute sensory reminder of that is why we do it. And, you know, in this particular year, having something simply so accessible to us, you know, to be able to walk into the bay and swim around for a little bit and get out and just be like, okay, you know, this washes away a lot of all of the weight, really, like both, of course, literally and figuratively, that, you know, the water really buoys us up and we can't help but sort of reflect that back in our emotional states.
I remember you talking about how you had difficulty, though, after that swim getting warm, and you talk about how the cold burns in a funny way, and then you're generating your own heat. It's feeling acutely more alive, you say, and paradoxically being closer to death. This paradox is something you really talk about a lot. What have you learned, or what have you come to appreciate about the paradox of swimming, that we are, quote, as you say, pulled to the paradox of water as a source of life and death?
You know, I've thought about this a lot. I'm one of those people who, when I was a kid, I was so afraid of death, and I was so afraid of dying. And when we would visit our relatives' graves during like various, you know, the Qingming festival for us Chinese is that we're visiting the graves of our ancestors and, you know, sweeping them and cleaning them. And I remember visiting my great grandfather's grave and just being so scared. I think I was 6 years old. And then just, you know, being afraid of that, like, and not having anyone to talk to about what that felt like. And when I started swimming, you know, from a very young age, it made me feel very acutely aware of this, you know, the ocean, especially as this really joyous, but also very dangerous place, you know, and you kind of have to learn to live with that to be able to enjoy being in it. And so being in open water now as an adult, I mean, every time I go out into the Pacific, whether it's to surf or to swim, I feel that, you know, alertness to just what the environment is. But also just, you know, when you're in the open ocean, you confront dangers and hazards. So you are very alert and aware of what you're doing and what the water is to you. And I think that as a daily practice, you know, whether it's paddling out, you know, to Ocean Beach or Pacifica First Light, or to swim in the bay or swim at aquatic park or swim in the Pacific, to recognize that and still do it and still feel that I'm seeking something from it. I'm getting something from it, and that's joy. And I think that practice is a kind of a Buddhist practice for me of accepting and still embracing like what that is, which is to be alive in the face of death.
Let me go to caller Malcolm in San Bruno. Hi, Malcolm. Join us.
Hi. I really enjoy this program, Forum in general. Thank you for allowing me to talk to you. I've enjoyed listening to your stories. Pacifica near San Francisco has a deep water, about 12, 13 foot, saltwater pool, many lanes, 10 or 12 lanes. And I love to dive in the deep water to the bottom and then swim underwater, five or six lanes to where I go work out. And it's just a feeling of elation to work out in that environment. And I was wondering if you had any thoughts about older people like myself, I'm nearing 70, who like to swim and want to start swimming longer distances, what type of training or what type of steps towards getting more capable would you recommend? Thank you. I'll take my call, answer off the air.
Thanks, Malcolm.
Thanks, Malcolm. I guess I wonder if you're talking about longer distances in the pool or in open water. And I think that if you are thinking about venturing into open water, I mean, just find a good buddy. Find a buddy and find someone who knows, you know, where it is that you want to do like this longer distance kind of open water swimming. If it's in the pool, I mean, you know, I think just training, putting in more hours. And I know that I know lots of folks who swim in the pool that you describe in Pacifica, and they love it. And I know that you have a good master's program there. So, you know, I would take the advice of your master's coach if you're talking about swimming longer distances in the pool. But if it is open water, I know a lot of folks are really interested in that or have been trying it. And again, it's so awesome that in this time to be able to learn something new and try something new. And it makes you, you know, really proud that you've been able to overcome that. I think start with a buddy, you know, kind of start slowly, especially in the colder water, and like little by little you get to know a spot, and then you can really swim longer and adapt to that. I mean, we really are very resilient when it comes to water.
Well, Ted writes, swimming is one of the things I've missed the most during the pandemic. Used to go to the Y right after work. Cleared my head and is a great workout. How does swimming affect the brain compared to other exercises?
Well, we talked about that a little bit with the alpha wave activity, but there has been, so in the book, I really wanted to get at some of the science around swimming and what swimming as an exercise really did for us. And there is a longevity scientist named Hiro Tanaka, and he told me about how they did all these swimming studies with arthritis patients, just about like pain tolerance and mobility, and you know, being able to like just flexibility and all of that improving all in the water and strength. Without, you know, all of the, I guess, the impact of being on land and gravity, of course. And that from a pain perspective, I mean, just from like a euphoric, you know, your dopamine levels go up, your metabolism speeds up. And so it all kind of is this wonderful feedback loop where then when you get out of the water, they found that all of these patients with arthritis, you know, all of those benefits continued. So it wasn't just about being in the water and then being buoyed and then feeling like, oh, you know, while I'm in the water, I feel good. But once I get out, I feel bad again. It's that all of that wonderful, I guess, your brain on the dopamine boost of swimming really does help manage pain. And so we know that that's such a big thing as you get older with like managing your health and wellness and of course, injuries. And so I think that swimming is wonderful across all ages. And, you know, when you get in the water, you want to play. Water is conducive to that. So I think when Malcolm was talking about being in the pool in Pacifica and swimming on deep underwater with all the lanes, I always think back to when I get in the pool, no matter who is in, you know, doing the laps in the morning, that they, you know, you see the strictest looking guy who then dives down under the lanes and is spiraling around, you know, for no other reason than it feels good and it's fun and it's play. And, you know, kids, that's what swimming reminds us to do, to play like we did when we were kids.
You also talk about how bodies of water are shared spaces. Can you talk about what you mean by that?
I mean that, okay, so water connects us. I mean, just to, you feel that when you're in the water, you're sharing it with bodies, you know, in a very simple in a very essential way, you know, whether it's a pool or the ocean or a lake. And I think that especially, you know, in my experience growing up in New York at Jones Beach and at the public community pool where I grew up swimming, and both on swim team and then as a lifeguard, the public space, the shared space of you know, being in that water with all kinds of bodies of different ages and races and colors and sizes. And that was really beneficial to me. You know, I grew up in a town that was pretty white, and I went to a school that was very white. And then in this pool, I write about this in the book, the Freeport Rec Center, shout out to that across the country, that it was a rec pool, community pool that was really diverse, and in a town that was very Black and Latino. And for me, as you know, a Chinese American girl growing up in the 80s, that felt like a community that was reflecting back to me just different people than what I was seeing, which was, again, like a very, very white community. And so it was the one that was very accepting. It had lots of kids from all over Long Island and of all different socioeconomic classes. And it was home to me. You know, I swam on that club team for 10 years. And I also became a lifeguard and taught some lessons. And it was just like, it made me feel for the first time like at home in my body.
You know? So many different levels of community, so many different levels of sharing. Let me go to Sid in San Francisco next. Hi, Sid. Join us.
Hi. I have dealt with a lot of neurological problems all my life, and it definitely helped me with and luckily, Bonnie just explained how it helps with pain and managing pain, the chronic pain and everything. It also, but with the physical problems comes with a lot of psychological and mental problems with it, which is sometimes depression and sadness and not being able to be part of the community, you know, going to parties, doing things. And it helped me with that a lot. And I think it's the best therapy I can recommend, but I don't know how to verbalize it. And I think the author can help put it in words.
Sid, yes, I think you shared that beautifully. And there is another listener here who echoes your point about therapy. This listener tweets, "I've been a daily swimmer since the early 80s. I swim for sanity, meditation, exercise, joy, and memory triggers. I wrote a song after my dad died, Swimming Through the Tears, and I wrote it underwater and in the locker room shower. So swimming is therapy too." Kimberly writes, "I grew up in Oahu as a military brat. To this day, being near and in the ocean gives me a childlike wonder, remembering a world before adult responsibilities. To this day, I have to live near an ocean." And Ben asks, "I have a mammalian response characteristic, which is where I jump in water and I want to gulp air and my body amps up in fear. I was told that this is easily overcome, but can you tell me how?" Any thoughts on that?
Well, first I wanted to say, Sid, thank you so much for describing what the water means to you, because I think that you said it beautifully, which is that it is therapy. It is, you know, soothing. It is in all of the ways that you described. The mammalian dive reflex. A lot of times, so with very, very cold water, and I suppose this instinct we have to inhale in really cold water, like if it's a shock, then you can inhale water. There's a chance of that. So the recommendation is always to, if the water is really cold, to kind of ease into it. If you're not used to it, to prevent that from happening. I mean, there are definitely reflexes that we have that are meant to be, you know, kind of safety things, but in sort of reality and practice, sometimes they're hazardous for us. You know, all of this, I love what everyone has to say about what water means to them. And I think that it can be very therapeutic and buoying and soothing. And that's why we are so mad for it and after it, you know, despite, you know, having to learn how to do it, having to practice, having to manage our oftentimes fears to get in.
And Heather writes, a reflection as well about what swimming means to Heather. "There's just something about water in the ocean. At age 16, I discovered surfing and was a goner. I returned to the sea for my peace of mind. I still paddle and dive down to the bottom and hang out for a bit." And I understand you have a kid's book coming out about a surfer, Bonnie Tsui, next month. Is that right?
I do. It's called Sarah and the Big Wave, and it's about Sarah Gerhart, who is Santa Cruz resident and the first woman to surf Mavericks, that big wave surf break down in Half Moon Bay. And it is about the day she meets her first big wave there. And it was such a joy to get to write this book. And it's illustrated by the wonderful artist Sophie Diao. And we are really excited to introduce it into the world on May 11th. That's another like kind of pandemic silver lining, which is like to get this book ready for the summer.
Yes.
And you know, surfing's debut in the Olympics, and it's really exciting.
Yes. Well, we're looking forward to that. And there's so much in this that I really appreciate to reflect on about the role of swimming in our lives. Bonnie Tsui, thank you so much for coming on to talk about it today.
Thank you, Mina. It was such a pleasure.
And thanks for our listeners for sharing their experiences with swimming, why they swim, why they don't, and also what it means to them. Caroline Smith produced today's segment. We'll have more right after the break about some issues that street vendors are facing these days. So stay with us for that. I'm Mina Kim. This is Forum.
This is Barbara Leslie, president of the Oakland Port Commission. Oakland International Airport, OAK, is proud to bring you this podcast of KQED's Forum. When you're choosing your next adventure, the smart and convenient choice is to fly the East Bay Way from OAK to destinations across the USA and Mexico. And when you return home, tune in to KQED, always bringing us remarkable stories about who we are and where we live. Enjoy today's episode of Forum.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.